Welcome to Travel People, living authentic lives, finding kindred spirits, and fulfilling dreams. Sometimes we have to get lost for a while to live found and free. Here we talk about essential journeys, what I call beauty breaks for the soul. They lead us home to the people we were created to be. My guests are masters of reinvention and growth, and they live around the globe. They're going to share their travel go-to places and give insider tips on where and how to take time outs in their backyards. They'll inspire and empower you to plan your next adventure, to live your best life of relationship, rejuvenation, rest, whatever it is that you need and seek. I'm Cindy McCain, travel writer and blogger at Southern Girl Gone Global, where I share my journey as a mom, explorer of 27 countries, former expat, an empty nest survivor. When my children flew away, I did too. For a while, I landed in Morocco. After 2 years there and one in the Caribbean, I'm back in Nashville teaching university English, telling travel tales, and coaching others as they write theirs. I'm so excited to introduce you to some of the colorful cohorts that I've met from around the world, whose heads and hearts push me to press on in growth, live by core values, never settle, accept change. They make me laugh, and no matter how far or long we're apart, they remain my ride or die friends. We'll start with where they are, where they've been, and how they got there. Okay, the literature teacher in me will ask them to describe their trajectories using Joseph Campbell's stages of the hero's journey, the way he said we follow our bliss. I'll ask guests when they heard the call to a different life, what pushed them to cross the threshold into a new world, who became mentors and allies as they faced testing and struggles, whether or not they found what they were looking for, and how their lives have changed since. I'll never forget teaching high school students in Marrakesh. We study many works that are in our Western curriculum, but I particularly love teaching them The Odyssey and The Alchemist, because I felt like I was living a journey at that time too. The mission of every episode that you will hear is that we remember the truths Alfred Lord Tennyson expressed in his poem, Ulysses. I am a part of all I have met. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a better world. I never dreamed when I started planning these interviews that they begin in April 2020, when the world is on lockdown. Our hearts are with the suffering and grieving, with those on the front lines in the medical field, the first responders, and everyone still putting themselves every day in harm's way, sacrificing so that we can have groceries and other essentials that we need. For those of us healthy and at home, we're finding that being grounding can be grounding. We're more in need of connection than ever. Some of us are thinking about where we want to go from here. So maybe this is just the right time that we come together. Hi, Kate. Everybody, I want to introduce you to my dear friend. This is Kate Woods. She is the owner at Morocco Bespoke, which is a luxury small group tours for adventures in Morocco. She is also a very dear friend, someone who I met while I was living in Morocco, and we have had many adventures since then. So I just want to say hi and tell us what's going on there.
Okay. Hi, everybody. It's lovely to be here. Yes, Cindy's right. We're very, very old friends. I'm right now sitting on my balcony of my apartment. My apartment is in Marrakesh, and it is just after 7:30 at night. And not only are we in lockdown, but we're also in Ramadan. Ramadan is the time of year when the Muslims fast all day, and the sun has just set, the call to prayer has just happened, and everyone is now breaking their fast. It is quiet as quiet all over the city, because for once everybody is actually doing exactly the same thing. Everybody is eating and drinking.
Yeah, that's so the last time I was in Morocco was the summer of 2018, and I stayed with Kate for a month, and I was there during Ramadan. And I had, even though I lived there for 2 years, I had gotten there the first year right at the very end. And then the second year of teaching there, I left as it was just beginning. So I had never really fully experienced the city as quiet and still as it was a couple of summers ago. But it is like a different place, and especially Marrakesh, which is so full of noise and, craziness. I'm going to show what you had on Facebook, where you showed the square or the at the end of the street. Because normally, you take your life into your hands if you try to cross the street with all the motorbikes and the taxis and the donkey carts, and it is with the lockdown completely quiet and still. So tell them just a little bit about how lockdown has worked, and how is it that you're still there instead of at home in Melbourne, which is where she is from, Australia?
The lockdown here started on about the 16th of March, and it's not only a lockdown, it's also a curfew. So at the moment, no one is meant to be on the street after 7 o'clock at night, and the curfew ends at 5 a.m. in the morning. So normally, Ramadan means that everyone comes out of their houses at night and eats and drinks and goes to the gym and goes to the mosque. And this year, there's absolutely none of that. The silence is absolutely quite deafening. And everybody's been encouraged to pray at home because all the mosques have been shut. And also, there's no visits from family members, there's no get-togethers as everyone celebrates the end of the day eating. There is nothing. Everyone just must stay in their house. If we leave our house to go to get food or to the pharmacy, we must carry with us a signed official permission slip to say we're allowed out of the house, and we also must be wearing a mask. There are police and soldiers and tanks in our streets, and even 2 days ago, going to the supermarket, I was stopped by police and I had to show my form, and then they wanted to know where my residency card was. I don't have a residency card. On a tourist visa. Luckily, I had a copy of my passport with me and we were just waved on. But that is not the first time I've been stopped. It is a very strict thing here. So the reason I'm still here is that I've been living here for nearly 6 years and this is my home, more so than Australia. So I didn't really want to rush back to Australia to be quarantined for 2 weeks in one room. This is my home. And also, if I'd gone back to Melbourne is about to be plunged into winter. I hate winter. And yes, we're about to be plunged into summer, but I would much prefer the heat than the cold. So, I'm just sort of waiting the whole thing out here, as we all are.
Right. And you had said that possibly within the next month to 2 months, there may be a plane out, and you've decided that you will go, and maybe explain why.
Yes, I was offered a repatriation flight a couple of weeks ago. But of course, with these things, you're only given a few days' notice. Now, I have a lease on an apartment. I've got a foster cat that I'm nursing back to health to go back on the streets. I would have to pack up everything or just walk away. All of that was just too complex. And I didn't feel like leaving in a rush and in a panic. I don't feel panicked at all. I feel like, this is my home. I'm just waiting this out with everybody else. I have put my name down for the next repatriation flight, but that might not be for 1 month, 6 weeks, 2 months, who knows? It's just such a waiting game. I've actually started to pack up my belongings, ready to maybe put them into storage or move, if I must. I'm just sort of making plans. Just to be ready to see if and what happens. It's just all an unknown. I'm just trying to be ready. if it's possible.
Yeah, I know. And I know that you, well, because obviously there's no tourism and it's going to get really hot in the summer. And of course, the way we always survived in the summers is to go to have pool days or to go to the ocean. And if there's none of that happening, and there's no way to know yet, but if that's the case, then it would be really difficult to stay in the middle of the summer.
Yes, they won't release us because that's the end of Ramadan, and they won't want to open all the mosques for everyone to go piling into them and have huge family gatherings. I would say that they will maybe send people back to work on construction sites or other industries, but I don't think they will let us out of our apartments or our homes until, you know, maybe the 1st of June. But the bottom line is they have to open the borders. You know, there's people stuck out and there's people stuck in. So that's another waiting game. When will they open the borders? Because all the airspace is shut, and also the ports. So, like, if you wanted to come in from Spain, you cannot take the ferry. There's just nothing. We're quite cut off from, you know, everywhere. You know, who knows? And, of course, you know, Marrakesh, where I live, exists mainly for tourism.
Yeah.
That's not going to recover for 12 months, I would say. People won't have the money to travel. People will be nervous to travel. My business is with all of those people who want to travel, and I'm hoping they do return, but I don't see it. All the hotels are shut, the cafes are shut, and I just have no clue about when any of that will get underway. And I don't know who will come for many, many months. And, of course, people generally don't come a lot in August because it's so hot. So, of course, we're looking down the barrel of that. So we've got a double whammy going on here, the lockdown, the after lockdown, plus the heat of the, you know, high summer. So it's just an unknown. It really is. But, you know, it's very difficult for drivers and guides and small guest houses. You know, maybe a lot of those just will not resurface. I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
Now, one thing, so where Kate lives is the same apartment complex that I lived in. And I know that there's teachers that at the same school where I taught that also live there among locals. And I guess we were saying that if you're going to be quarantined, you know, at least there was always such a sense of community there. And expat community is something that I've had, you know, definitely social groups in the States, but there's something about expats. You just bond very fast and furiously, and because you just do life together and in a way that's quite different than the way we do things here. And at least if you want to see somebody, you know, you would go across the courtyard or you would go to the rooftop and tell them about Jen, who's another friend that I taught with, how you guys are getting your exercise during this time.
Okay, so I firmly believe that everyone has something that will get us through. And for me, it's exercise. For the teachers, of course, they're all teaching online. So I meet one of the teachers in the afternoon and sometimes two or three others, and we're all very socially distanced, and we walk our rooftops in single file about 2 meters apart, like, you know, the Pied Piper sort of look going on, and we walk round and round and round and round. And, you know, we might do that for 70 minutes. You know, it's on the seventh floor of the building and it's flat, and we have 5 conjoined rooftops so we can have a bit of variation each day, and we can see, you know, the Atlas Mountains and we can see the mosques and other apartments. But, you know, most of the time we just talk, and we talk about a lot of the time about food.
Yeah, of course.
But it's really good fun, and I really enjoy the company of the teachers. You know, Americans and Canadians. And, you know, this afternoon even, one of my friends is fostering a puppy. So we all met in the courtyard, all standing, you know, meters away from each other and, you know, sort of feeding the puppy and playing with the puppy and, you know, yeah. I mean, it's very surreal when you think about it, but, you know, we're very lucky because there is a community and it is social.
Yeah.
Even if we're in lockdown, people always message all the time. Do you need anything? I'm going to the supermarket. Yeah. Do you need anything? Do you need water? You know, will we do a joint order for ice cream? You know, there's lots of good things. And I don't think people are lonely. I haven't been lonely. But of course, most of us live on our own anyway, so that's not necessarily going to happen. I think for me, one of the worst moments, if there is a worst moment, is when I wake up and you realise, mm-hmm. Oh, it's same old, same old.
Yep.
You know, I've got to get up and start, you know, my normal lockdown routine.
I was thinking and that then, today. Of course, I was thinking I still wake up. And just for a moment, just think, oh, I was so hoping this was just a bad dream, a nightmare.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But the rooftop, rooftops are, that is the social place to be in Marrakesh. Yeah. And we used to have lots of parties up there, birthday parties, karaoke parties.
Movie nights.
Yoga did. We would have yoga. I remember once I was up there on the rooftop, you know, in some crazy contortion and looked up and there was a shooting star, you know. And then used to, it's not there anymore, but the prison used to be across the road. And I remember once we were doing yoga and I just, all of a sudden we heard all these cheers and we looked and it was the men over the prison looking up at the rooftop. But quite interesting. But yeah, it's...
Well, there's none of that at the moment because they lock the rooftop at 5 o'clock.
Okay.
To stop social gatherings.
Right.
To stop people thinking, oh, we don't have to socialize late. Right. We can just whip up there for a cigarette or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, they all the rooftops are shut at 5 p.m., which is, you know.
Yeah, and that and know, that's
one of those things.
Well, and used to, I mean, the social stuff really happened at night, you know, when it was cool or at sunset a lot of the restaurants, of course, in Morocco, everything is built around rooftops. So that's where you would go to have a drink at night or, you know, have your dinner and all that's not happening. So.
No, nothing. Nothing. It's very, very surreal.
Yeah.
Very, very weird, strange times for everybody. Really.
Yeah. As far as, you know, of course, the question that I always got asked is, do you feel safe there? And I really did. And in fact, I had to get used to the fact we had sort of heightened police presence. I guess it was around the winter of 2014. There was some ISIS, you know, claims or whatever in the world, not there specifically, but Morocco, always the police were there. And, you know, at first it was something to get used to, but it's like my friends at school said, this should make you feel safer because, you know, they're there walking the streets, they're there at the apartments, and they really are there to protect everybody. So
I think that probably the most dangerous thing when Marrakesh is normal is trying to cross the roads. That's where I feel, you know,
with all the
dicing with death.
Traffic.
I don't feel unsafe generally. I mean, you recall we have security guards on both entrances here at this apartment.
I can say hands down that in the two other countries I've lived in, which were Morocco and the Dominican Republic, I felt far safer in Morocco. I just miss Morocco so much. I was there 2014 to 2016, and then again the summer of 2018. And as soon as I can, I want to come back. And I just, like you say, though, we're not sure what's going to happen. There's a huge expat community there. People we know that are the owners of these hotels and these resorts and these beautiful riads. And and that was actually how, tell them the story of how you ended up working there. What sort of brought you there?
Okay. Well, 6 years ago decided that I needed an adventure. I was sort of living life on hold. I'm a nurse and I'd been in my job 14 years and I, my last child left home and I sort of was sort of like a classic empty nester and just thinking, I'm going to be a spinster with cats if I don't act. So I started to look for a job online, doing anything, anywhere. And I found a very old advertisement for someone to do guest relations in a small guest house in a riad in the Medina here in Marrakesh. Now, it was an old advertisement and they were wanting someone that spoke Italian and Spanish, which, being Australian, I speak very little of anything. And so I took a punt and I sent off an email and lo and behold, the job hadn't been filled. And so the owners of this riad were English. So I had an interview with them and that was it. I sold the car and got a tenant and set off for Marrakesh. And I worked for this in this riad doing guest relations for close to 3 years. And, you know, the owners who are in England still, you know, are my dearest, dearest friends. And, you know, I have to always thank Maria for being the person who single-handedly changed my life by taking such a risk and employing some crazy Australian to come and, you know, work in her riad. But honestly, I've never had a single regret and, you know, I'm still here.
Right.
And, you know, I've struggled with the indecision all the time of, you know, do I go back? When do I go back? Can I go back? Should I go back? And I can never make that decision ever.
Yeah.
So in a way, the decision has been made a little bit for me now to think very seriously of moving back to Australia, even if only temporarily till tourism reopens up here. But truly, you know, I learned so much, you know, working with Moroccans and learning some of the language and improving my French. The opportunities provided to me by moving across the oceans a long, long way, you know, have been a miraculous thing for me. And I will be forever grateful that I had this chance, truly, really.
Yeah, and she's so good at what she does in guest relations that she's had friends that when they go on vacation, she minds their riads. And it's so interesting the way that you and Alexandria met there, because
yes,
you were from the same place, never knew each other until you actually moved there. And then Kate introduced me to her, and you know, that's just another wonderful person and another friend that I met there.
Yes, Alexandra is another Australian, and there's not very many of us at all. And I met her at a charity function, and then we met after that and we had lunch together, and I discovered that she owned this beautiful riad, absolutely beautiful riad. And we were talking about, you know, Melbourne, and she was a barrister in Melbourne, and she lived one block from where I worked for 14 years. I mean, and we didn't know each other in Melbourne, and then we're here and we meet each other, and it's just the most crazy thing to think that all those years we were so close.
Yeah.
And our paths didn't really cross. And then, you know, I have worked for her many times in her riad. And in fact, right now she's not in that riad. That riad's all shut up, and she's doing her lockdown in Copenhagen.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure where she was.
Yeah.
Well, and just maybe kind of explain the allure for women, empty nester women, to come there and make a new life. I mean, had I not had family wanting me to come home, I would have loved to have stayed way longer than I did.
I think if you're an adventurer, there is great allure. If, you know, obviously there's horses for courses, but if you like adventures, this is the place, because there is an adventure every time you leave the house.
Yeah.
You actually do not know what you are going to see. You know, you just never know what is going to happen here. And I think women there's a lot of women who look for adventure, and you know, they've been bogged down with kids for many, many years. And you know, I, for one, I made school lunches for 25 years in a row for my children. You know, that's not adventurous. So you know, when the chance came to go, I was overjoyed to be able to come here. I think also the other allure here from Marrakesh is that you really can be in Paris for dinner. You are 3 hours only from most European destinations.
Yes.
And, you know, that is a huge plus for an Australian who, if they decide to be in Paris for dinner, they have to plan well ahead
right.
and spend a fortune on airfares. So,
oh, yeah, the airfares, you know, having Ryanair there, EasyJet, other smaller airlines, you know, you can get to just about any major city for, it just depends, anywhere from, I was even recently looking to see if it's still as cheap as it was a couple of years ago. And with Ryanair, you can go to Spain sometimes for as cheap as $50 round trip.
Yes.
You know, the Venice trip that I did, just decided with some coworkers, hey, let's go to Venice for New Year's Eve. $125, you're in Venice. I mean, for New Year's Eve. So there's that, and I just think the adventure. We've had some, and I'm going to show pictures, and also of some of the ones that you do on your tours. But of course, we've both done the Sahara Desert, and we've done. There's so many things there to do. The mule rides that I'll have you talk about. That are so the authentic stay and all of that we did when your daughter was in town. And and then of course the travels that we did when I came and we went north together, and we'll talk about each of those places. But I want to just take a break and we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back, and we've been talking a little bit about what brought Kate to Morocco, and also just why people, you know, if you either love it or not, but we definitely loved it, and why a lot of women have settled there. And one thing I would say is that for a lot of people who are trying to reinvent themselves, she actually, you know, as we said, managed a beautiful riad by an English woman, Maria, that owns it. But we also have like friends that have bought theirs there. And it's just so affordable, you know, compared to what I'm paying in Nashville, Tennessee for this tiny, tiny apartment that I have, and what people pay for houses now with this boom that we've had here, what you can get for your money there. So tell them just a little bit about, if you wanted to, now Riyadh is a traditional Moroccan home. It used to be owned by, a lot of them were by the wealthier people, and it's sort of, they've become like they're the B&Bs in the Medina, which is the older city. And the walls of the city were like first century. So we're talking an ancient city that was kind of, you know, built in medieval times, but people have refurbished these beautiful homes, and they're usually, they have a courtyard in the center. We'll show pictures, and then your bedrooms, you know, that you rent out or around that. And most of them now have restrooms in your own suite. They have rooftops.
But, you know, there are bargains to be found. And let me tell you now, post-lockdown, there will be, you know, a lot of sad situations where people have had to go under and they will have to sell. And I think that foreign investment in real estate is going to be very, very much encouraged. In fact, 92% of the riads in the Medina are foreign owned anyway.
Right.
So people purchase them, they put in a Moroccan staff and they leave the country. But it would be an exciting adventure to buy a riad. I think there's a lot of paperwork involved in buying, but you know, once you've got the thing under control, I think it would be quite an adventure. And then, you know, you can decorate to your heart's content. You know, you can bring in traditional artisans that will do all the proper mosaicing, or you can, you know, just whitewash the whole thing and, you know, have a contemporary sort of decor. But they are all round the central courtyard, as you said, and usually you have 6 or 7 bedrooms. They're all small. Some people have 2 together and they open it up, so they've got a, you know, like a 12-room hotel. But on the whole, most riads are 7 rooms. That's the traditional size, and based around a central courtyard. And it's from the olden days where the women couldn't go out, and so they created a pretty interior garden, usually with a water feature, a fountain, or a small pool where they could spend their time, because once they were in those houses, they never went out again.
The first time that I stepped into one, it truly, because if you can imagine how it's quiet now, we would not be able to be doing this on your balcony if this were a normal Marrakesh day, because the motorbikes racing and the taxis beeping and the, you know, it just wouldn't happen. You'd hear, you know, the mules, you know, on the pavement. It just wouldn't happen. But it's so quiet there now. But yeah, the first time I remember being in the Medina, and everything was just crazy and hectic. And, you know, you are having to dodge to make sure that you don't get run over, you know, when you're in the old city. And then it's really, sometimes it can be hard to find. A lot of times, because for one thing, taxis can't get inside. They can only go so far. And so often, maybe people will send somebody that works at the Riyadh to walk people there with the luggage. Mm-hmm. They have these little carts that they'll throw the luggage on and you follow them. But, you know, you're in all of this just marketplace mayhem, and then all of a sudden you hope it's the right door, and you know, you'll knock on the big knocker like something in a movie, and the door will open and you'll be greeted to step in, and then it is like paradise. They don't have roofs on them, you know, they are open air. And so when I say rooftop, the rooftop is around, but you can see usually down into the courtyard from the rooftop. And so everything is, there is a sense of this paradise where it is, you have trees growing in there. You have, a lot of people have, you know, pet tortoises or, you know, ambling about. I mean, birds are singing. I mean, it's like it's something in a fairy tale, you know. My grandmother
Expect the unexpected in this country, Cindy.
Oh,
and you never know what's behind closed doors.
That's a crazy surprise. But but to me, the beauty, I just cannot. I like color and I like design and patterns. And to me, it's the most exotic, beautiful place of anywhere I've been. I just, it's so different than other places. Mm. And there's a lot of beautiful places that I've enjoyed, but I just love Morocco. So, but you might, I guess, tell them how we met. Do you remember how we met?
Okay. We met at a function run by a...
Internations.
A sort of expat thing called Internations. Mm-hmm. And a lot of expats join that. And it's a networking sort of setup. Mm-hmm. And I went with Maria, the English owner of the Riyadh where I was working. And we went together just to introduce ourselves and see what's what. And it was, you know, there was Cindy and another couple of teachers, and you know, we sat down and had a drink together, and you know, here we are still, you know, having our drink together, and we've seen a lot of the world since then. But the Internations offers a function once a month for expats, obviously not now, but usually. In I think I've only been to a couple ever since then. And you know, I think that it works across the world too. I think
it does.
Internations is a worldwide organization.
It does.
And in fact, it was their website where I found my job.
Oh, okay.
Surprisingly enough, yes.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay, because I've been to Internations here in town.
Yeah.
And I was going to go to one in the Dominican Republic, but I never made it. But it is a great way to network with people when you're, especially for expats. And one thing I remember, it was just so good, but we could relate to each other because we were very, you know, we were very involved moms. I taught at the school that my children attended, kindergarten through 12th grade. And as she said, she packed lunches every day for 25 years. You know, we were very, very involved with our kids. And, you know, and sometimes it was hard. And I know she said, well, that first Christmas, I had planned to meet my children in London and then bring them to Marrakesh. And she had said, now when they go back, we need to plan a dinner out because you will be depressed. And I'm so glad she told me that because, of course, you're so excited. I'm finally going to get to see them after 3 months. And we had the wonderful, just a wonderful time together. But, oh, my goodness, when they went through that gate at Heathrow to go back home, and I knew I wouldn't see them for 6 months. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I could stand this. And but, you know, we always had each other to kind of, for those times. And the same thing for Mother's Day, we, of course, now we always FaceTimed with our kids for these, you know, all the time. But for Mother's Day, we went to Janine Tamsna. You made reservations. And we did like a garden lunch. And, you know, I think a lot of, with empty nesting for me, it was always trying to outrun being sad. It was like, you know, and I wanted an adventure too. I mean, I was ready to do that. And I know that since moving back home, you know, there are times I know that I have to go, Cindy, you know, your children have their own lives and you've got to give them space. And the more full my life is, then the more, you know, I leave them alone and give them the space that they should have at their age. So, it was, I think it was good. It was hard for us to be apart, but I think in the end, it's a wonderful thing. And I know you've shared the country with your children. They've come over several times.
Yes.
And it, it makes the time you are together very much quality time.
Yes. And also in our family, we always had the rule that you go to life. Life doesn't come to you. So if you sit in your room on a device, nothing's going to happen.
Right.
Whereas if you step out, there'll be something exciting waiting for you. And, you know, my kids have traveled very widely ever since they were very, very small. And so they'd always gone to life. I'd always encouraged them to work overseas, to try out this, to try out that. I'd never said no to any extracurricular activities or travels. And so when it came time for me to depart, no one had a leg to stand on. So, you know, off I went.
Right. It's interesting because during quarantine, you know, a lot of families are saying how, well, the good thing, if you are quarantining with your family, is that you have quality time. I would come home for summer holidays or whatever, you know, we spent that time together. Like if I was home for a month in the summer, unlike most people with grown children, I mean, the three of us really spent pretty much that whole month quality time. Yeah. Whereas you can live
bonding.
You can live in the same town as somebody and maybe see them once every, you know, couple of weeks or once a month.
Yeah.
But when there's this, you become much more intentional about your time, I think, and you appreciate it more too. So
Yes, absolutely. And of course now I've got a grandchild, so that's you know.
Is that harder? Is it harder to be away from her?
I don't know because I've never lived in the country while she's been alive except for, you know, holiday, you know, weeks or months. But I do see her every day and, you know, she's now walking and talking. Time moves very, very fast. But I'm lucky that, you know, aren't we lucky that we've got technology?
Yes.
And that, you know, we can be here and yet we can still hear the new words and see the first steps and we're not so isolated. I don't know that this would be possible if we didn't have
technology. And also maybe tell them a little bit about the mule trek we did, where we were and the authentic stay. Okay. And
The mule trip that I run is an amazing day. And we leave Marrakesh and we drive 90 minutes to the Atlas Mountains and we get on our mules there and we take a ride on these mules further right up into the mountains where often no vehicle can go. We ride probably for an hour, if not a bit longer. And then finally we dismount after riding through all sorts of orchards with oak trees and almond trees and walnut trees and cherry trees and apple trees. We also ride through very old Berber villages and we see how the local people live and they probably have no running water and no heating. And they have a very tough life in winter, but, you know, they all come out and wave and say hello as we go past. After about 90 minutes, maybe 60 to 90 minutes, we dismount and we go into a homestay for an amazing homemade traditional Moroccan lunch in a homestay. But we, you know, take our shoes off and we sit on cushions on the ground and we eat so much of this amazing food we eat. We have the traditional meal. We have the salads to start off with the breads, and then we have tagines, and then we have couscous, and then we have fruit, and then we waddle down the hill back from the village down to the car park. But it's in the most amazing day. You ride those mules high up into the mountains and you stop and you think the rest of the world could barely be existing. Because, you know, while you're on your mule, a lady in her traditional costume will walk past with a cow on a lead, going off to feed it. You know, she's walking it to get some grass. This is not 21st century stuff going on. You are really taken back into a very different world.
Well, the mountain is the largest in Northern Africa.
Toubkal is the largest. I think it's the third highest in Africa. But Toubkal is the biggest in
Northern Africa.
North Africa. Yes.
And the reason I think it has that sort of making sure my mic's on, the surreal feel, that is where Brad Pitt filmed 7 Years in Tibet. They were actually in Morocco. And that's another thing. So many movies that people have seen and think that they're filmed other places were filmed in Morocco.
Yes, absolutely. All of those deserty things like Lawrence of Arabia and The Mummies and Gladiator, they were all filmed here.
Yeah, Queen of the Desert with Nicole Kidman, with the Gertrude Bell story,
The English Star Wars. Patient?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many, so many. So many. A long list at Atlas. A lot of them at Atlas Studios, and that is one of the stops when you go to Merzouga. If you go there to the desert, is you could stop there. You could stop in the Dadis Valley. So tell them about some of the tours that you do around the country.
Well, we run bespoke tours, which means that we offer what you want. If you say, I want to go to the desert in a black Range Rover and, you know, dress up like a Moroccan bride, we can arrange that. But the standard trip is usually from Marrakesh or Casablanca to the desert via the Dadis Valley and then onto Fez. And Fez is a UNESCO heritage city, very, very ancient and very, very fascinating. Over 9,000 alleyways in the Medina. You do need a guide because it's very, very complex. The desert part of our trip is really quite stunning. The opportunity to sleep in a luxury tent with an ensuite, open fire at night and magnificent food is an experience, you know, made in heaven, really. And you can, the stars, I mean, there's just so much that is exquisite about those desert trips, really and truly. Luckily for me, just the day before lockdown, I got back from a 2-week trip with some Australian ladies, and we stayed in a magnificent luxury desert camp. And those ladies, I think that the highlight of that trip was the desert experience.
Oh yeah,
it's really something. And of course, there's also that surreal moment when you think, oh, I am standing in the Sahara. It's the sort of stuff you read about in, you know, from grade 5. You know, you read those geography books and you learn what happens in the Sahara about the nomads and the camels. And then suddenly you are standing there in the dunes of the Sahara and you think, oh, my goodness, this is, you know, little Kate from Melbourne, you know, stepped out of her boring little life and she's standing in the Sahara. It's quite a sort of...
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, we were talking about the beautiful designs and all. anything you want, you can find somebody that will make it in Marrakesh. And so you also do shopping tours.
Yes.
Because a lot of people, that is a place to shop for sure.
I do love to go. I've always loved a bit of shopping. I'm a retail therapist for sure. But here, of course, you know, you can shop in boutiques, high end. You can shop in the souks. We have an industrial estate with a lot of outlets. There's just endless things to buy, really and truly. But also you can bring designs of your own clothes or your own furniture and have them made here. You can go to the ceramic factories and choose amazing tiles for your own kitchen or your flooring and have them shipped home. You know, it really is quite exciting. And so, you know, I do take people on shopping tours. A lot of the time we go to the industrial estate because there's such a variety. We take a driver because it's a pretty sort of dusty, you know, industrial area with a lot of motorbikes and trucks. And so the driver sort of just takes us from store to store and holds onto our shopping bags. But also, you know, you can go to weaving outlets and you can go to rug co-ops. There's really, you know, nothing that we can't do. And I had an amazing experience earlier in the year. Yeah, I think, oh, maybe it was end of last year. And I took a lady shopping. She was from New York and she wanted to buy fine linens. So I'd earmarked some stores for fine linens, both in the new town in Gillies where I live and in the Medina. And she pulled up outside our meeting point and I rolled back the, you know, the car, the van door. And there she was, this lovely lady with her white Italian greyhound in a basket. So here am I thinking, oh my God, Father, it's a boiling hot day. She's got this tiny little dog in a basket. Moroccans do not like dogs.
No.
What am I going to do? We're going into the Medina and she's got a dog with her. And the dog was fantastic, Charlie the Italian Greyhound. And she traveled with it from New York and she'd been in Spain and she'd been in Portugal. And now here they both were in Morocco about to go shopping with me. And I was thinking, how are we going to get around with, you know, no taxi driver will pick us up with a dog because, right, you know, dogs are not sort of welcomed in the by Muslims and Islam. So I thought, oh, my goodness, what are we going to do? Anyway, so she sort of tucked the doggy into its bag and off we went.
Hoped that people would think it's a cat because cats are okay, just not dogs.
Cats are okay. But yep. Then at every shop she got it out.
Oh, no.
I'm there with my heart in my mouth thinking, oh, no, what's going to happen next? And you know what? I saw Moroccans kiss that dog.
Oh.
Everybody just.
You know.
Adored that little white Charlie.
It's like you say, you never. You know, and that's the people are so friendly. I mean, I just miss my Moroccan students. We stay in touch through social media. The people that I worked with there, the Panut boys, I know are keeping you in groceries. Yes. You know, I miss, you know, my driver Ismail. There's just so many people, Saida, who took care of me like a mother would, you know, she would do things I didn't even ask her to do, you know, she would organize my sock drawer, you know, or whatever. Yeah. I mean, she just loved taking care of me.
Yeah.
But people were so, so sweet. And I remember one of my favorite, like, experiences that just was so unexpected is, well, first of all, I do want to say that, you know, even though Muslims do not drink, but there's, in Marrakesh, there's a lot of tourists and expats. Yes. And so there are, you know, stores that you can buy alcohol. And I was buying some wine at our neighborhood store. And, of course, I don't speak Darija, which is the language, nor French. And they had music playing, you know, and the girl that was ringing me up and the guy that was sacking the wine, Ed Sheeran was on. And he was singing Thinking Out Loud, which is my favorite song of all time. And right when we got to the chorus, all of a sudden, all three of us in English started singing. And at first, we kind of looked and grinned, and we just kept singing in English. And that was just one of those Marrakesh moments that I'll never forget. My going away brunch was we did at the Selman. And that was the best day. I mean, you're sitting here, you're eating the best brunch I had, bar none, when I was there. And, you know, there's these beautiful Arabian horses, and they do a horse show to music. They're dancing around you. And you're like, am I real? Is this really happening? We went to a donkey rescue, an orphanage, you know, just, of course, Project Soar, just so many experiences of all kinds, And, but tell them, okay, so one of our, I guess one of our big trips, well, our first trip is when we took the train to Casablanca. And So my coworker was Russian, and he was from St. Petersburg, and that's where the United Nations, the Model UN conference was going to be there. So our students, our delegates, we were going to take them. And so I had about, I think, 19 passports I was carrying to the Russian embassy in Casablanca. And the whole time I'm just thinking, please don't let anything happen, because that is a lot of responsibility to take those and drop them off. We were picking them up. Picking them up. Somebody else had dropped them off. So we got on the train, and the whole time I'm like, okay, we have got to get back safely with all these passports, because we had to have a special visa to go to Russia, obviously. But we got off the train, and we were told kind of where the embassy was, but we didn't know for sure. We couldn't find it. And then this couple just pulled over, and nicely we got in their car, and they took us there. I mean,
cardinal sin. You never get in a car with strangers.
I know. And ended up at the Russian embassy. But then after that, we went to Rick's place. Which is, if you go to Casablanca, you really have to go. And of course, upstairs, they're playing Casablanca in black and white. But there's the piano in the courtyard, and the food and the service. And it's just very magical. So,
yes.
That was, I guess, our first trip. And then when I came summer of 2018, the first 2 weeks we stayed in Marrakesh, and then we took off north. And so you could tell about all the stops we made.
Yes, we took the train to Meknes, and we had lunch in Meknes, and another weird thing happened. We were sitting in that cafe in Meknes waiting for the driver, and we looked over into the square, and a man ran past with an ostrich on a lead. I mean, and a lady dashed out with a bucket of water for it.
I know. Like, where did that come from? That was very odd.
Exactly. Yes. And so then we went off to the very, very ancient village of Mulay Idris.
Yes.
And we stayed in a riad there owned by a lady from New Zealand. And that view, remember that view?
I do. I think I have a video that I'll show.
That was absolutely a stunning, stunning view. And then after Meknes, after Mulay Idris, we went to the Roman site Volubilis.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Which is an amazing, amazing ruins, Roman ruins. The Romans were everywhere, obviously, and they were certainly in Morocco. And then from there we went to Chefchaouen, which is the very famous blue town. Everything is blue, and it is a very small town. Then what did we do then? Oh, we went to Azila. Now, Azila is the most sweetest, quiet little fishing village with a tiny, tiny walled Medina, very much Portuguese influence. And we actually stayed in quite a contemporary Airbnb there. And it was very, very, very nice. It's very pretty. And in fact, Azila is interesting because every summer they have a very big street art festival. Right. And people come from everywhere and paint murals all over the walls. And then just before the summer starts, the painters from the city council come and paint every single wall white, which was what they were doing when we were there. They were painting over the old murals.
Right.
And from there, we went to Tangier, where again, we stayed in a stunning Airbnb with marble bathrooms.
Right, on the water.
On the water.
Looking over to Spain. Right.
Yeah, look, we could look right over and almost see the Rock of Gibraltar. Yeah. It's really quite stunning. And Tangier is a fascinating city.
But the guide that we really liked was in Tetuan.
Oh, when we were in Tetuan, we had a guide.
He was great.
And Tetuan is also known as the White City.
Yes.
And it's very, very old.
Beautiful.
And we just arrived and we just asked the Riad, could you get us a guide? And, you know, that's always can spell trouble because, you know, the guides think, oh, Western women, they just want shopping. But this man said, no shopping. I want to show you my city.
Yes.
And he was outstanding.
He was.
And spoke very good English. And in fact, Cindy, I've used him again for other clients because
he's wonderful.
He was very, very good.
Well, when we were planning the trip, you know, there were two reasons I wanted to go north. And one was I had just seen the Spanish drama, The Time in Between, which is so good. And it takes place in Tangier and Tetuan.
Yes.
And so I wanted to kind of retrace the steps of that. But also we'd watched Anthony Bourdain's Tangier episode.
Yes.
And literally, I believe right when we got to Tangier or right before...
Yes.
I think we were there when we got word that he had committed suicide, and it was
so sad,
because we wanted to go in his footsteps and see all the things that he had recommended. But yeah, we met up in, I was trying to remember how many steps we did in New York City. I think it wasn't at like 21, it was over 21,000 that day.
Huge.
I mean, we're big walkers, but this was even a lot for us. So we did the High Line. That was something that you had wanted us to check out. And that was such a fun way. And we stayed in one street over from Little Italy. We were right there by Mulberry Street in Chinatown. And it was their Italian Fest, the San Gennaro.
Cindy, I'm just going to say excuse me and move inside because I can hear the rubbish collection coming along.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll pause it and let you go in.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry about that.
That's okay. Okay. So we're back. And so anyway, we met up in New York and had a fun time, but you might tell them why you were there.
I was there and it was very lucky that I actually got there because of that hurricane. What was the name of that hurricane?
There's
Florida.
Been so many. I can't remember which one.
Because I was stuck out because there were no flights, but my daughter was eloping and I was the guest, the only guest, the only person that knew about the elopement, and I was there to hold the baby. So that was the reason why I had to get to New York. And so they got married under the Brooklyn Bridge. They had a celebrant and a photographer that they'd found on Instagram who were absolutely spectacular. And it was really an amazing little event. And I was very, very privileged to be the one and only guest.
Nice.
But, you know, and so that's why you and I got to have a great weekend.
Yes.
And it just happened to be that Italian festival.
Yeah.
And we were sort of staying in the midst of it. That was just an incredible.
That was really fun.
Fortuitous thing, yes.
It
was. All those beautiful lights at night, and oh my goodness, it was really fantastic.
It was, and also she came to Nashville. So I left Morocco in 2016, 2017 when I got home from the DR. She came and stayed and experienced Music City, and that was fun. We did a horse ride, and I don't know.
We went in the cornfields. We went in the Kentucky cornfields and took photos, you know, behind corn stalks.
Because you've not really ever done that. You've never really seen that.
And also remember the biscuits and gravy. I've never had anything like that.
Like biscuits. Yeah. And also the steeples, the church steeples was something that was different for you.
Yes. Yes, and we went to that beautiful, we got up early and we went to that beautiful restaurant. It was like an old house.
Oh, the Loveless Cafe.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
More biscuits.
Enjoyed that present a lot.
That was fun. And you did something for the first time, another first, you did salsa dancing. for the first time ever.
Oh, well, I don't even think I could take credit for calling it dancing, but it was. But I, it is something that I've got in the back of my mind that I would like to do properly at some point in my life.
Definitely.
You know? And I actually, in fact, when I came back from that trip with you, I did put out feelers here in Marrakesh, were there any dance instructors? But of course, that there was nothing like that going on here.
Yeah, when I was there, I really missed the salsa dancing, but I was able to do, actually at a graduation party, it was for the seniors by the pool, my Russian coworker knew how to salsa dance. He can do everything. He's been all over the world. So we did a quick one there, but my coworkers taught me how to do like the local kind of Arabian dance, and that was really, really fun. But also,
I in fact enrolled myself for some belly dancing here with a. But you know, the very first lesson, I had a broken elbow, so I had to sort of start trying to, you know, do my first lesson with my arm in a sling, and then we've been in lockdown ever since.
Right.
So, yeah. This lady has tried to continue it online, but it's not something that's so easy to do along the lounge.
Right. I found it hard because it's like a different muscle group than salsa. So it was hard for me. Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. I found it hard. Yeah. That was nothing to do with the arm in the sling. It was to do with the hips.
Exactly.
Very tricky.
Well, you have done so much travel. What were some trips you've done that, or places, even you've lived other places as well that you want to mention as meaningful?
Well, I have done a huge amount of travel, and I've loved every single trip. I don't believe in a bad trip. I don't believe such a thing exists. It certainly doesn't exist for me. While I've been here in Morocco, I have done two extensive trips to India, which seems crazy because it's a long way to go from Casablanca or Marrakesh to parts of India. But I've done it because I like to go there with my sister, and she's quite an Indiaphile, and she speaks some Hindi, so she's a great person to travel with. And the Indian trips with her have been second to none. We travel very, very well together. I feel very enthusiastic about all the places we've been. We always go to a festival, a sort of autumn festival, and in different parts of the country, and I've seen spectacular things, and we're sort of united because we just get up in the morning, get our cameras, and go out for the day taking photos. That's all we do. We don't sort of hunt out specific sites. We wander back streets and just go taking zillions of photos. And I just absolutely love it. I know that there's so much more of India that I haven't seen, and that I will have the opportunity to go back there with her many times over in the future, I hope. The other highlights, I suppose, I went to the Cinque Terre last year and loved it. Just loved those pastel Italian villages. That was really beautiful. Athens on New Year's Eve once. You know, it just goes, and it was pouring with rain in Athens for that New Year's Eve. And, you know, the lights in all that sort of wet blurriness. Oh, yeah. Beautiful things. And other times, you know, Croatia. I've never been to Croatia, and I just thought Croatia and the national parks there were spectacular. I've stayed in fantastic accommodation. I've never gone over the top. It's been a lot of Airbnbs, and so you meet interesting people. It just goes on and on, really. Yeah. I've just had a blessed, exquisite life of travel in the past 6 years, truly. And, you know, sometimes I've been on my own, sometimes I've been with friends, but every trip has been outstanding. I did an amazing cycle from Bruges to Amsterdam along the canal paths, sleeping on a barge. That was absolutely fantastic. Beautiful stuff. Belgium is a beautiful place. And, of course, Belgian chocolate featured very heavily.
You love your desserts.
Yes, I'm a chocolate fiend. you know, trips to Paris. In fact, just this week, someone sent a photo of me with these two friends in Paris in 2015 saying, we must do this again. And yes, we must. I just don't want to stop this sort of lifestyle. It's been put on hold now, temporarily, I hope, and I just have to wait and see what happens. But honestly,
I know you used to say, you know, moving back to Melbourne would be, and I get this, it would be, so the most exciting thing probably would be walking the dog.
Yes, it's predictable. I think that's the issue. Life in developed countries is predictable. Life here is just not at all predictable.
Right.
Under any circumstance on any given day.
Right.
Yes, even today in lockdown, you know, I've seen a man break his fast sitting on the roadside under my apartment, even though we're all in lockdown and curfew. You know, he didn't even have a mask on.
He was hungry. He was ready.
He was doing the right thing. He was probably desperate.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that was a remarkable little thing to witness. And, you know, good on him.
You know, another thing I was just thinking too, we did, was when we did that writing that Jason led and C.D. Kalki.
Yes. C.D. Kalki is a beach, a little surfy sort of beach town, 25 kilometres from Essaouira, which is a big fishing town.
Yep.
And it's right on the Atlantic coast, and it's a massive swathe of Atlantic coast, and beautiful and quite deserted.
Yes.
And, you know, the odd person with their camels going past. That was an amazing retreat, amazing writing retreat. And the rooms were beautiful with the black and white tiles and another exquisite weekend. And do you remember, Cindy, when we were on that minibus going there, we were stopped by the police, and the police got on that bus and asked every single person where they'd come from, because that was sort of a very big time of terrorism.
Right.
And
they had arrested a cell near there.
That's correct.
And, those were interesting times for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, here's exactly, here is what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that obviously that by next summer we'll be doing, I'll finally get to do a Moroccan writing retreat there and bring some people over, and they'll get to meet you, and we'll do all kinds of adventures. But if you would I kind of like to end with this, maybe if you could go back and tell your 20-something self something, what would you tell her?
Get out and go. Do not have any fears about, don't have any fears about holding back and missing out. Just go and do it. Even do it, you know, in a small way. Just go and experience life. Don't just sit at home hoping and wishing, because it doesn't happen. And lots of good things can happen by staying home, but you learn. It's a personal growth trip. That's what, you know, is the most important thing. And 20-year-olds are like sponges. Just soak it all up before you decide to spend the rest of your life with someone and have children. Do this first, because it'll be something you can draw on and look back fondly when you're changing nappies or feeding babies in the middle of the night, you know. Making lunches for 25 years.
Right. And I really do think that one thing this quarantine, now there'll be some that will be, you know, understandably, we will have fears for quite some time. But I really hope that those, you know, we'll get a vaccine and we'll get this under control. And but I think I think for some people, they're going to say, you know, I'm going to make the most of my time. I'm not going to wait, because we never know when things could be taken away.
No, life is short. And there's a couple of things that I want to still do. I really want to swim in the Dead Sea. That's something that I really want to float, you know, and feel that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, my grandfather did that when it was World War II, and he was stationed, you know, somewhere close to the Dead Sea. And so I really sort of had this in my head for a long, long time to go to the Black Sea. And so that's high on my list, to go and float there. This just doesn't stop. You know, there's so many. And Turkey in those hot air balloons in Cappadocia. Just so many things. Don't get me started.
I know, me too. There's places I want to go back to, but there's places I want to go that I haven't been for sure.
Yes. And another place is called Annecy, and it's just out of Geneva, and it's always been described as the sort of Venice of Switzerland, and I've wanted to go there for as long as I can remember. So that's, yet another place.
We've just got to make it happen.
Yeah, got to make it happen. Absolutely. Corona or no corona, we can still get it done.
That's right. Well, thank you so much. It's so good, as always, talking to you, and we never say goodbye. I remember. I'm going to start crying. I remember the last night I'd packed up everything in the apartment to come home. And you would come over, and I was still just giving things away because they wouldn't fit. I'd set on my suitcases. I went over with four suitcases, and I said, I will go back with four suitcases. I was really trying to live a simpler life. So I was just casting things off. But I remember we went out on my balcony, and we were just sitting down on the ground because everything was packed and gone and sold. And we had, champagne, I think, and we were looking at the sun, the sunset, and you always said, we don't ever say goodbye. We just say, later. And so it's been a see you soon ever since.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. See you soon. Love you.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Night-night. See you.
Come run away with me.